The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Joe Show Connecting All Abilities podcast. I'm your host, Joseph DeYoung. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I have another guest on my podcast here. She's a speech therapist for kids with autism. Before I introduce her, this is recorder Ron. And so without further ado, let's welcome Anna. What's your last name?
Arend.
Let's welcome Anna Arend to the show. Good afternoon, Anna. How are you doing today?
Hi, Joe. I'm just fine, and thank you for having me on as a guest today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. How does it feel to be on the show today?
Well, you know, this is pretty exciting. I love WKTV. My husband and I have supported them for a long time. My kids used to be volunteers here, and I'm kind of working on a podcast of my own, so I've recently had some intimate relationship with them of trying to figure that out, and I was just pretty excited when your friend Tyler connected you to me and said, hey, do you want to do this? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, because I remember I was at ACT when he told me,
then
I remember you called me and you said that you wanted to do your own podcast here.
Yeah, I got this message from a friend of mine, Tyler Riley, that I work with at Pine Grove Learning Center, and he said I just met a new friend through ACT. His name is Joe DeYoung, and I said, well, that's more than a coincidence. If I'm thinking about it in the right way, I'm pretty sure that I know Joe from Pine Grove the first time I was there in 2009 and 2010. And so I reached out to you and you confirmed that. And then I just couldn't believe that you were doing a podcast here. And the coincidence was that I'm preparing to do one here as well. So I think that's serendipity, right? That we came together.
That's right. Because if I remember correctly, I met you. Because I remember when I came to Pine Grove, I actually met you when I was at Pine Grove back in 2009, if I'm correct.
That's exactly right. And
yes.
Pine Grove had just opened September of that year.
They did.
Yeah. And we were 8 classrooms and about 40 employees. And our principal at the time was Deb Mikely.
Oh, yeah.
And
I remember her.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember meeting you, and I remember all of our long conversations we used to have.
Yeah.
And I remember my oldest son, Walker.
Yeah, I remember you
meeting
brought him
you
there.
And yeah, he's on the spectrum. He has autism. And the two of you had a long conversation. I think he was maybe 12 years old at the time, maybe 13. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and I remember just the fun we used to have listening to sounds. And
yes, exactly. I remember that.
The great conversations.
Yeah, so anyways, we're going to get down right to the questions.
Okay.
So question number one.
Sure.
All right, let's get right into the questions. Let me get this fixed here a second. Okay, here we go. And okay, so question number one. So how long have you been working as a speech therapist for kids with autism?
Let's see, I graduated from graduate school at Western Michigan in 1994, and I had exposure to children on the spectrum during my clinical years there. And then I worked for Mary Freebed for a bit in neuro rehab, no exposure there, but then started a position at another school in town called Ken O'Shea, which at the time was classrooms for 2 and 3 year old kids with complex differences. And I began seeing especially little boys in classrooms who had what looked like these motor planning differences, these neuro differences.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, Joe, in 1994, which sounds like a long time ago, but if
it
you
is.
Really
it,
think
yeah.
about it, it's within your lifetime, not all that long ago.
Yeah.
I began to see patterns in little boys who were having motor planning differences. And the most that we talked about them was through this word called dyspraxia or apraxia, which means motor planning difficulties. And it took a few years to finally get the community to come together, and I mean medical community, school community, to come together and recognize that it was okay to start talking about kids through the eyes of something called autism spectrum disorder. So even in, you know, 1994, it wasn't a word that was used as a common diagnosis.
No, it wasn't at all.
But then by the later 90s, like 96, 97, 98, just two short years later, it became more to the forefront. And it became, there was more of an awareness in the medical community, more of a an awareness in the psychotherapy community, and it gave credence to this title, nonverbal learning disorder.
Yeah, that was some. Yeah, I've heard of nonverbal. Yeah, I've heard about that. And now that you mentioned Kedish, when you mentioned Kennel Shea, I used to go there when I was
little. Oh, yeah, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So maybe I knew you through there, too. Well, I started at Kennel Shea in 1995, I think.
Right on the dot. Yeah, so did you enjoy doing that?
Oh, I loved it. I absolutely loved that setting. It was, it met the need for everything that I wanted to always be as a therapist. It was looking at children with complex disorders through medical diagnoses, looking at children through educational programming. Our teams were strong. I was extremely fortunate in that the people that I had who were my mentors were some of the very beginning people of that program. So these people were 15 and 20 years older than me, and they taught me the ropes of how to find value and work with students who had complex needs like neurotypical differences and autism and disabilities and differences. So I fell in love with it.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
And then moving on to the next question. So what brought you into the field and why?
The field of speech language pathology?
Yeah.
Well, when I started out in college, I thought I wanted to be in nursing. My mom was a nurse. My older sister was a nurse. And the first time I got to the information about needles and blood draws, I knew it wasn't for me. It brought out all the squeamish in me. But I knew that I had a giving heart, and then I really, really wanted to work with a population of people that I could give back to help make a difference in their life. Then I had a nephew, my older sister's second born, her youngest, was born with Down syndrome. And my older sister encouraged me to go to a program on the other side of the state. I grew up in Saginaw, which is on the east side of the state. And there's a small town there called Carlton. And this baby, my nephew, was born before there was 0-3 programming. So my sister found this small school in the town of Carlton, and she encouraged me to come to the school and to look at what the speech pathologist did at that school. And so I actually got hired there as a student and worked in the summer and worked primarily with kids who had Down syndrome. That was more of the population then of special education, and fell in love with the kids, fell in love with working with the kids. Still wasn't sure. I really liked this thing called speech language pathology. I think I just didn't understand it. And nonetheless, my sister kept encouraging me. I looked up the program at Central Michigan University, went to CMU, talked to people about it, and really fell in love with the nature of the classes that were offered. Communication disorders, how to help people with severe disabilities become communicators. And that really set me on the path. So I started on that journey at CMU. And honestly, when I graduated, still wasn't sure that I liked it, because I did not see myself sitting across the table from a student working on R's and S's. and got married, moved over here with my husband, and inside of me, you know how sometimes inside of you, thoughts just keep coming up and things keep pulling at you?
Yeah, yeah.
I always wanted to go to Western Michigan University.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Charles Van Riper Clinic there, and they had a solid program in speech-language pathology. I went to that university and applied, started talking to the instructors there, and got introduced to something called sensory programming. And their program was a compatibility program with speech therapy students and occupational therapy students.
Hmm.
Once I got paired up with that, I suddenly understood how it was that I was supposed to be a speech therapist to students through helping them move their bodies. And I fell in love with it. And that was where my journey started.
Oh, yeah. Well, because like back to that question that you said, like, there were fewer, like zero programs.
Yeah.
Well, now there's a lot more programs now.
Programs are established now. So you have Early On, whom I used to work for. I was the bridge person for Early On. I worked between Ken O'Shea and Early On. And
yeah.
It's a strong, structured program, at least in the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And that program has been instrumental in helping to identify children early on so that autism spectrum itself and developmental disabilities are no longer just guesses. We're actually bringing it to the forefront.
Exactly.
And begin treating students much earlier than before, which is key.
Yeah, because at that time, they didn't know what was going on.
Right, exactly.
But nowadays, everyone does.
Yeah, it's broken wide open. There's certainly a lot more to learn, a lot more for me to learn, but certainly we can have much more open conversations now.
Exactly.
Especially with social media about what autism is or what autism isn't, or what neurotypical is, what neurotypical isn't, and where to begin the journey with treating children.
With autism, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... Okay, and then moving on to the next question, it's coming right at you. So, how do you connect your clients to the community?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. It's something that my position at Pine Grove asks me to focus on weekly, because I work with a population of students from ages 6 to 26. Those mm-hmm. students that are ages 14 to 25 are in what's called a transition period. Yep.
Yeah.
Transition program or a transition IEP, individualized education program. And it forces us as a team. On our team, we have teachers, other therapists, our principal, psychologist. It forces us as a team to work with the family. And when I say force, I mean that in the kindest way, to take a look at what's available in the community. And our program is actually devised so that we are working towards helping students find their connections in the community. So one of the strongest connections that I have is a program that has come here from Chicago that my older son is involved with, called Pucks for Autism.
Mm-hmm.
And my older son is on the spectrum. He played hockey. That was his ism. Hockey became his therapy over the years. And he wrote an article in high school that got published in Michigan Hockey Magazine.
Hmm.
And a gentleman in Chicago who has a son on the spectrum, the gentleman's name is Sean Pfeiffer,
mm-hmm.
saw the article, reached out to my son and said, "Hey, I'm starting this fundraiser event in Chicago. Actually, it's already underway. It's called Pucks for Autism. Would you be interested in bringing a hockey team to this event?" My son said, "Sure." I had no idea he was doing this. My son said, "Absolutely." He collected his teammates from Davenport University, and they took the first hockey team from Michigan to the event in Chicago, Illinois. And then 2 years ago, Sean Pfeiffer and his family and my son worked to bring that event across state lines and formed a non-for-profit fundraiser here.
So did you guys do that?
Yep. And so it's this will be its third summer here. It's the first weekend of August. And they are a complete generous, honest organization that's simply interested in supporting organizations that need funds so that they can support the kids with autism. So
yeah, because supporting the kids with autism is very, it's just important.
It's hugely important. So
it really is, because I remember Because I remember that you that when we talked, I remember you said that he was on the spectrum.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Joe, while supporting the kids with autism is hugely important, the real importance I find is supporting the families and connecting them to the community so that they're not isolated.
Right, because isolation is not good.
Yep. And organizations like Pucks for Autism bring families. So I've had students from Pine Grove, they come to the event. I had one young man who last year stood with his nose pressed against the glass watching every hockey game because he's such a big fan.
Oh, cool. All right, so moving on to the next question. So how long have you been a speech therapist for kids with autism?
For kids with autism?
Yeah.
I really think my first introduction without knowing that it was autism started in 95 when I started at Ken O'Shea. And then more concretely working with the label of autism, I would say the late 90s or early 2000s. And then 5 years ago at Pine Grove, our program changed so that we are more deeply involved now with students with a more complex form of autism. So it has changed over the years. So,
right, it has.
You know, since the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's funny you say that because when I was there and then at Lincoln School, there weren't really a lot of options at the time.
Yeah.
But now there is.
Yeah, right. And if you mean options, like what's available in the community,
right.
as far as diagnosis and treatment and then connecting to the community, you're absolutely right.
Yes.
I think that has grown quite a bit.
Because.
And recently.
Right. And because I had a guest on the podcast, he works at Behavioral Enhancement.
Oh, okay.
And he works with his clients with autism. So, like,
yeah.
He'll communicate with them, like, through sound.
Yeah.
Because usually there's kids with autisms that can't speak.
Right.
And some are nonverbal, so they just usually make sounds.
Right.
To communicate. Or usually, like, he'll set up some games or they'll play tag or play chase or tickles or peekaboo or...
That's the beauty of being a therapist. That's the part of my job that I enjoy the most is connecting to the behaviors that the student is displaying and making meaning of it
to
find that engagement, that relationship.
Right, and it's like expression.
Yep.
And because it's like they're expressing their emotions on what they want
Absolutely.
And what is it they need or what's wrong.
Having a disability doesn't mean that you're non-thinking.
No.
Right.
But what it is, it's you're thinking, but you're thinking in a different way.
That's exactly right. And so that's my job, to find out what their way of thinking and their way of communicating means and how to give meaning.
Exactly.
How to give meaning to that. I work a lot with augmentative alternative communication systems, which is not something that we were working with at Pine Grove as much as we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Since the birth of iPads, it has busted open the world of communication.
Well, it's opened a lot more doors, too, for folks with disabilities,
right.
including visual impairments.
That's exactly right. So there are visual languages, touch languages. I work a lot with students who
have cortical visual blindness,
maybe
yes.
even combined with autism, and we're using touch systems or three-dimensional touch systems to simply help them communicate words like yes, no. It's very respectful, right?
Right. And then moving on to the next question. So what is it about your job that you like a lot?
Okay. I think I touched on it just a little bit, and that is the connection, that deep connection with the student, understanding what their communication is telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the time... I like the silence of my job, and that's being with the student or near the student, especially the student who's on the spectrum, who's nonverbal, maybe having a hard behavioral time struggling behaviorally.
Yep.
I find if I just stand there silently and watch, most of the time I can figure out what's going on with that student.
Right. Why is this student upset, or what's the problem, or why is he or she crying,
and I get this feeling on the inside of me of I've got it. Just tell me more, kid. Tell me what's going on with you, and let's see if we can make this better.
Right, and we can work it out,
yep.
you know. So And so I guess what I'm thinking is that you actually, it sounds like to me that that you actually enjoy it a lot.
The more complex it is, the more I enjoy it.
Exactly.
The more I can have time to be with a student, to get to understand that student, the more I am rewarded.
Rewarded for that, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's a one. Because winning an award for that is, it's pretty good though. When you do a good job with somebody with a disability.
You know what drives me, Joe?
What's that?
Is I keep this in mind all the time, that everybody has a right to communicate.
Exactly. I was going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like what drives you to do the job,
yeah.
You know?
I just like people.
Yeah. And then, let me see here. All right, let's see. Next question. Now, what made you... what made you want to become a speech therapist, and why did you want to become a speech therapist? Was it something that was it something you've been wanting to do, or was it just something that you were thinking about doing? Or?
Yeah, no, in high school I didn't know. Kind of go back to that story that I talked about with my older sister and my nephew who was born with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
In my journey of trying to figure out what speech pathology was, didn't know, didn't have a clue. I think my older sister saw that it might work for me and was trying to draw me in. That was a fortunate gift that she gave me of inviting me to my nephew's school to work with the students. They were three-year-olds at the time, two- and three-year-olds. And one day it dawned on me.
Yeah.
Because my nephew was a struggling talker with his Down syndrome, right? The kids born with Down syndrome have a lot of oral motor difficulties,
a lot
of motor speech difficulties.
Yeah, they do.
And it just simply dawned on me one day, if he can't communicate, how is he going to make his way in the world?
Right, and how is he going to let someone know what's going on or if he needs something?
Yes, and how can I learn how to help him?
Right. And that's what you were thinking at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've helped him, I think you helped him too, didn't you?
I was around him all the time. We were a close family, so I was around him all the time. And I think that probably the most help that I gave him, because remember, I was young. I was just going into college at the time.
Yeah.
Was love and relationship. And so that he was motivated to want to use his mouth to talk. He was motivated to want to talk about the world. He was motivated to tell us what was important to him.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it does sound like you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. And then the next question. Well, this is the last question for you.
Okay.
So, when you're not, what do you do to relax? When you're not working, if you're at Pine Grove or somewhere.
Sure. Some days at Pine Grove can be pretty intense, depending on how many deep behaviors students need to have that day.
Yep.
So I tend to do things that are very different from that. Physically, I love to exercise, so I work out every morning. In the summertime, I swim every day. My husband and I like to travel. We like to visit breweries. Can I say that?
Well, that's okay, but do you like to go for walks?
Love to go for walks. I do that every single day. Love to run up hills. I love to get together with friends and talk and hang out.
Yeah.
Love to go to church. Love to go out to eat. I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
Love to take our dog for walks. We have a rescue dog, and I love taking care of her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoy going for walks when it's nice out.
Yes.
It's long, you know, so. Anyways, thank you very much for coming on my podcast, and taking the time to come on my show and talk about what you do and why you love to do it. And it was actually my pleasure to have you here on the show.
Joe,
and I hope to have you back here on the show in the future.
Thank you, Joe. It's been an honor right from the first invitation, and I would love to think that I could come back again and we could chat some more. Absolutely.
Yeah, you should. All right. Is there anything else before we go? Is there anything else you would like to say or add to the conversation?
I think that the fact that you had me on your show says a lot about you, that you have such a big open view of the community, and that I think you yourself are somebody who wants to do good and do well, and through your disability, you don't let it stop you from connecting with the world and connecting with the community. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would like families to hear. I think the focus has to be on families now. That's why I want to take my podcast is how can we support families and how can we get families to open up into the community so that they are better able then to support their child. But we've got to support the family first.
Alrighty. Well, thank you very much for coming on my podcast.
And you're welcome.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's episode of The Joe Show, Connecting All Abilities podcast. I would like to thank my guest here for being on the podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share, like, subscribe, comment down below, and leave a rating and also review. You can find my podcast on the Whole Picture Podcast Facebook page, powered by WKTV. And you can also find it on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor, which is also powered by WKTV, and Stitcher. And my podcast airs on Tuesdays at 12:30 p.m. and Thursdays at 9:30 p.m. on WKTV channels Comcast 25 and AT&T 99. I will see you all next month or next time for another episode of my podcast. Please take care of yourself and each other. And also before we go, this is my joke of the day. How do you create light with water? Clean the windows.
Perfect.
Yeah, that one was a funny one. Alrighty. So I will see you all next time for another episode of The Joe Show, Connecting All Abilities podcast. And until next time, peace.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.